Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's for Women. Discover female health insurance through It's for Women.
Good day to you all. It's Oliver on the air till 10. It is a Tuesday now and we're already 6 days into the month of May. Can you believe it? It's dry, bright and sunny nearly everywhere. There's no rain at all forecast for the foreseeable future. It was a bit of a problem. There's the odd sky of a shower here and there, but nothing worth talking about. It is no Mo May though, so don't forget that. Leave it alone. Also, can we just admit, it's a little bit chilly in the shade, isn't it? But don't worry, all the warm, fuzzy feels are here. So tap out your thoughts to us in the usual way as you do, north, south, east, west, on the WhatsApp. That's 087-032-3232. And as ever, you can email oliver@rte.ie. Tadashjok. Now, this morning, we're going to be meeting the author of the expected smash hit novel of the year 2025. If you remember, All of the Colours of the Dark was the big book of 2024. Well, that was kind of Forrest Gump meets True Detective, from what I remember. And this year, it's another English author, Florence Knapp. It's her debut novel at the tender age of 48. Previously, she wrote books about sewing. And now comes The Names. And it's all about three different outcomes of a woman's life and her family's life when she decides what to call her second born, first son. She has a horrible, abusive husband who's the respected GP in the locality, but he's a monster at home and all that. And he's an outrageous villain who's called Gordon, which is a terrible name in the context of this story anyway. So she has to name the son Gordon or else, but she doesn't, and three different eventualities turn out. But it's very interesting because it's all about names and whether your life is mapped out based on what your first name ends up as. And I like this quote from the author, Florence Knapp. What a name, by the way, for someone talking about names, Florence. In many ways, she says, our name says less about who we are and more about our parents' tastes and our family traditions. A nod to a particular aspiration, era, class or culture. We shrink and expand, shrivel and bloom within our names, sometimes because of them, sometimes not so much, and they become inextricably bound to our sense of self. And however we might feel about this, most of us continue to reside within our given name, carrying it into childhood and into adulthood, frequently sending it out into the world ahead of us like a messenger. And there's lots of kind of conjecture and talk in the reviews, which are stellar for this book. And it's a kind of, it's amazing how your first name can determine how people view you instantly. Scary or friendly, maybe attractive, perhaps even ugly. It's a starting point for how you're kind of viewed into the world. And you know, people also associate, when you hear someone's name, you immediately associate famous people of the same name to that person. It's how you remember them. It's also how you might view them or attach them to the name you know that they share with a famous character from a TV show or a film and books and so on. We know that Jack and Sarah are massively popular names in Ireland, have been for the last 20 years from those CSO figures on birth names and so on. And having the first name as others in your class must be quite difficult, and inevitably you'll end up with nicknames and so on. I was actually due to be born on Christmas Day, and so I was meant to be called Christopher, but I showed up 2 days late and I ended up with my, a dedicated name towards Saint Oliver Plunkett, obviously, instead. So things could have ended up differently, you never know. Would I have just been called Christy Callan? Which is kind of a very clashing sound to it, doesn't it? Also, I think there's a certain generation. We had grandaunts, beautiful names, Delia and Eva. We knew them as all our lives. But I remember when Eva died, it turned out her name was actually Catherine. And Delia, she was always going to be Delia to me. I can't remember actually what her birth name was, but it just wasn't as exotic or didn't sound like a great novelist's name or something. Other people, of course, have their middle names. I think famously, Bertie Ahern was born Patrick Bartholomew, and then Bartholomew became the Bertie and became his first name. And our man on sound today is actually Harry, but his first name is David. His first name is David. Someone in school started calling him Harry and it just stuck. I'm sure different people in different walks of his life call him Harry and David accordingly. So what is in a name? It's an extraordinary debut novel, by the way, and the story leaps every 7 years in three different directions, which is not as confusing as it might sound, based on what the child is called, whether it ends up as Gordon or Bear or Julian. So, and there's a big chunk of this set in Ireland, which I'm quite interested in. There's also a character called Shilva, S-I-F-A-D-A, B-H-E, or is it L-E? It's S-I-F-A-D-A, L-B-H-E, Shilva, which is apparently a play on Sylvia, but I don't think it exists purely in the Gaeilge, so it's something that Florence Knapp has been playing with the names. She's playing with us all. What's been happening is we're having a nice sunny and sleepy bank holiday weekend. Well, in America this morning, all of the rumour gossip pages are full of the Met Gala and the various photographs. There's not as much out of it as there are in recent years. This time last year, we were swooning over Barry Keoghan and Sabrina Carpenter turning out as the celebrity match. But a year later, everyone's looking for pictures to see if the sign are there that they've rekindled after splitting up a couple of months ago. No reports so far, I can tell you. She wore a Louis Vuitton thing. Barry Keoghan, the Irish interest of du jour. Barry wore a black Valentino suit, which included a red sash at the kind of hip level, bejeweled sleeves and a bejeweled collar. This is the official explanation. Basically, think problematic villain from a reboot of the Cariati. The Karate Kid movies, essentially. Andrew Scott, other interest there as well. He wore something, I won't pronounce this right now, the Geneva Heritage. Is that something you've heard of? Don't know. A three-piece sea foam suit. The interesting thing here is he wore a mustard-coloured shirt. Okay, but the relief is that he's actually covered his arms for the first time ever on a red carpet, as far as I can tell anyway. And the main talking points out of it are that Rihanna has revealed an enormous baby bump, confirming that she's expecting her third child. Well done to her. Kamala Harris also made her debut wearing a custom off-white gown, and she emerged last a week from hiding and is apparently going to be running for governor of California. And Diana Ross returned for the first time in 20 years wearing an enormous gown. I mean, you could pitch it and it'd be a lovely marquee. 18-foot train. It's 18 foot in every direction. It's just a giant square thing. And I think they just take them off, do they? Is there even a dinner? Is there a gala at the Met Gala? There is generally, but no one has ever seen photographs of that. It's all about going in on the carpet. And this year's theme was tailoring, super fine tailoring black style. This year's gala, the first to focus exclusively on black designers. And the first to have a menswear theme, essentially. Okay, well, they're not here. DEI is over. And there are pictures galore across the internet. The Beckhams have covered all of the press across the weekend because David Beckham turned 50. I mentioned this on Friday, but the party went on for 4 days. His wife, Victoria Beckham, basically organised. There was a family party at their Cotswold mansion. And then there was a 24-hour trip to a vineyard in France. And then they went to a three-star Michelin London restaurant in Notting Hill on Saturday night. And Tom Cruise was there. There's a weird photograph of him at 3:30 in the morning with his legs in the air and he's laughing maniacally. When is he not laughing maniacally, I ask you? No sign of a girlfriend, obviously. Gary Neville was also there. Gordon Ramsay, that's living up to the name, and Eva Longoria were also there too. In fact, the neighbours complained about the party and there was a visit from two council officers at 3:30 in the morning. Londoner, they have council officers who show up and break up parties, not police. It's extraordinary. What a wonderful country. Why did we ever get rid of them, you wonder? And coverage, though, is all about the absence of their oldest child, 25-year-old Brooklyn Beckham. He's the one who tried to become a chef, remember, and he couldn't make a ham and cheese sandwich. The various newspapers are trying to speculate on what the origin of this feud is. He didn't show up to any of the birthday, it was 4 days long, didn't make a social media post, which apparently is a crime in this day and age, and didn't mention his mother and Mother's Day or her birthday either. So this is a long-running feud, which I've only learned about in the last 24 hours. The Mirror, of course, says the discontent began around the wedding of Brooklyn to Nicola Peltz, who's the daughter of an American billionaire, Nelson Peltz. And apparently Posh Spice is very found it very difficult to take a backseat during the wedding because the Peltz family took over because they've got more money than the Beckhams, basically. I think that's what it is. And there are other reports saying that, in fact, the brother is going out with someone he used to date, as in the older brother, as a teenager. So that's the random take. Nobody really knows, right? But this is the sort of thing you focus on rather than all the problems of the world. It's how we cope with things, isn't it? During the big day of the wedding, the wife stormed off as well in the middle of the reception because Victoria stole the first dance. Jeez. These tremendously petty rich people have all the class and sophistication of a herd of goats, essentially. That's what you need to know. And it kind of makes you happy that you don't need that amount of money. Jeez, nobody does, in the name of God. The other celebrity feud making the papers and the press over the weekend was Britain's royal family. And Prince Harry did an interview with the BBC after losing that court case over getting security for himself and his family when they're in Britain. And the feud goes on. He lost the case, basically. He gave an interview saying he wants reconciliation with his father, who's the King of England. But his father won't talk to him. The Buckingham Palace sources say the father doesn't talk to him because he doesn't believe the private chats will stay private because of the constant endless interviews that Harry is doing appealing for reconciliation. And there's the book as well. And the big thing is that while the royal family are saying their king is doing very well with his cancer treatment and so on, Prince Harry said in an interview, "I don't know how long he has left." And he's 76 years of age and still undergoing treatment. I didn't go to the Pope's funeral, all that. So he's like sticking his oar in and pouring vinegar on the situation at every given moment, which is very, very sad, isn't it? Yes, indeed. Trump, what's Trump been up to at the weekend? Well, the big news is they announced American films made in foreign countries will be hit with a 100% tariff because he said the American film industry is dying very fast death. It's over. This caused shockwaves everywhere. And then even a day later, he said this on Sunday, on Monday, he was kind of going, I'll talk to the industry, maybe make sure they're happy with their proposal. So uncertainty reigns once again, which will stall on the investment. That's trouble for us here because obviously we have a huge film industry in Ireland from Americans in particular, because we've all the tax breaks to get production of movies and TV series here. They've been tweaked over the years. At the moment, the business section of the Irish Independent tells me filmmakers can currently claim back 32% of the cost of movies, which cost up to €125 million to make. That's the ceiling on it. Ardmore Studios in Wicklow have seen, of course, Vikings and Wednesday for Netflix have happened here. And Rob Lowe's The Floor, because even Fox shows are cheaper to make in Ireland because of the cost of crews. It is cheaper to fly an entire bunch of people to Ireland to make a show and have an audience pretend they're Americans, basically, here. Initially, they flew in Americans to be in the audience as well. Troy Studios in Limerick as well. They're all taking business from Hollywood because it's so expensive to do things there. Netflix are headquartered in Spain, in Europe, and they make lots of productions there in Spain as well. So it's just totally unclear what they're going to do. The British press are mostly concerned about what this means for James Bond, because that's now owned by an American company, Amazon, which bought MGM, and Jeff Bezos gets to decide who the next James Bond will be because the Broccoli family are out as well. So he doesn't say whether the tariff will apply to American companies making their films abroad, especially ones that are set abroad. Wicked or Deadpool were made in England, and Wolverine. And of course, James Bond is set and made in Britain at the moment. But there's a further problem. Not only is it very expensive to make things in Hollywood at the moment, but the LA fires mean a lot of the skilled film and production crews have chosen not to rebuild where their homes were burnt down, but use the insurance money to go elsewhere and make TV elsewhere. So there's lots of complications. So he's been doing that. He's also announced plans for a big military parade to rival Bastille Days, because he saw it in 2017. He's always wanted to do it. It was too expensive to do it at the time, but now he doesn't care about anything. So he's going to do a big military parade to mark the US Army's 250th anniversary on the 14th of June, which happens to be the same day as President Trump's birthday. He will turn 79. He won't be mentioning that very much. A day-long festival, 6,000 soldiers, 50 aircraft. That'll quell people's fears of the incoming authoritarianism of the United States. It's going to cost $90 million. And he also was refusing to call this Thursday Victory in Europe Day, VE Day. It's the 80th anniversary of it, the 8th of May, celebrating the surrender of Germany to the Allied forces. And the Soviet troops rolled into Berlin, of course, and seized it. Of course, the Victory in Japan Day is the 15th of August after the all the nuclear bombs and all of that malarkey. So he won't call it VE Day. He's calling it Victory for World War II. World War. So he's not calling it. Does he realise the war was in Europe? Maybe he doesn't. He says he's not going to do that. OK, and in a Meet the Press interview with NBC, also over the weekend, President Trump said fulfilling his ambitious campaign, he needs to carry out these mass deportations. He says the courts are slowing him down. NBC asked him, well, do you not think it's your job to uphold the Constitution? He said, I don't know. Is that not literally the thing he swears in on when he becomes president? I don't know. I don't think so. Contradicting interviews he's given in the past. He's also asked about tariffs, and because there's now a fall in US economic growth, the first that's occurred since COVID times. And he's just going on. People are asking him, do you mean it's going to be empty shelves and things? And he says, no, just children need fewer dolls. This is literally what he's talking about.
I don't think a beautiful baby girl needs, that's 11 years old, needs to have 30 dolls. I think they can have 3 dolls or 4 dolls.
When you say they could have 3 dolls instead of 30 dolls, are you saying Americans could see empty store shelves?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying they don't need to have 30 dolls. They can have 3. They don't need to have 250 pencils. They can have 5.
But you said dolls, even dolls could cost a couple bucks more.
Maybe they might. But you don't need to have, as I said, 35 dolls. You can have 2, 3, 4 and save a lot of money.
What is going on? He's also doubled down on that overnight and is now talking about, you don't need 250 pencils, children. They could do with 5 pencils. So he's not counting out. Sounds like rationing in the late stages of the Soviet Union. John Stewart is having fun because another interview, Donald Trump has asked, well, some of the bits of the economy is going really, really badly. And he's finally admitted that. But he says, that's the Biden part. The good stuff is the Trump part. And none of it makes sense.
The president had to find a way to persuasively take credit for the remaining good parts of the economy while subtly assigning blame to Joe Biden for the bad on fire parts. Let's see how Trump threaded this rhetorical needle.
I think the good parts are the Trump economy and the bad parts are the Biden economy.
Nailed it.
It's just... and on it goes. There it is. 51551 for your text, by the way. There are some in on names. Jared Oliver Plunkett from Toronto via Rahini's in touch says he's Oliver Plunkett. Basically, Jared Oliver Plunkett. That is a great name. I agree with you. Well done. What about Rodney? Always been called Dave by Trigger in Only Fools and Horses. That's a running gag I'd forgotten all about. And someone says I should be known as Kit Callan. Because is that a short for Christopher, is it? Oh, yeah, Kit. OK, Kit Callan. It changes the perception, says Pat in Dublin. And already, Pat, I'm looking going, is it Patricia or Patrick? I don't know. Pat means Pat. You will know that story about the Camogie players who put on shorts in protest. It was Kilkenny Dublin match at the weekend and they wanted to play the match in shorts and they stood there at the throw-in ready to play and the game was held up and the referee threatened to abandon the match unless they put on their regulation skorts, which of course is half skirt, half shorts. And they did. They had to do it. Kilkenny goes on to win the match 4-11 to 2-12. But the story has made the international headlines on the BBC. It's in the Guardian papers as well this morning. Irish Camogie players don shorts in protest against a skorts diktat. Players have had enough of Rule 6B of the sports code. And basically there's pressure. Players say the skorts are uncomfortable and deter girls and women from taking up Camogie, which is the female, what are they describing it as? The female version of the Gaelic game of hurling. Okay, simple as that. It's a sports ruling body. We know the story. And Kieran Shannon is the Irish Examiner columnist. He's writing about this morning as well. And he says, it's over 6 years ago now since the former Dublin captain, Eve O'Brien, gave a candid, long-ranging interview revealing her various frustrations with the Camogie governing body. One was skorts, which to her was symptomatic of a greater problem. We wear skorts, she says, just because we're women and we should be ladies. It's a small thing, but it's very symbolic of the organisation that is quite traditional. And in a statement on Sunday night, the Camogie Association said that in the next fortnight, the testing of skorts for comfort, fit and design would begin, consistent with a vote taken at the Congress in 2024. And that vote, of course, was a majority decision, 54% in favour to force them to wear skorts and not give them the option of wearing shorts. The Camogie Congress is made up of, I suppose, management people in club levels, Camogie board people, people really, really involved in Camogie and are passionate and love the sport. And they decided for some reason they want compulsory skorts and that's there. But huge surveys for the Gaelic Players Association show that about 83%, they just want the option. They want it. And Kieran Shannon, his piece this morning, is quoting various academic papers on sport around the world and shows that 3/4 of women have said schoolgirls stop playing sport because of the sports kit and body image concerns. Skorts are really unpopular as because of they can, when doing energetic or big movements, they might ride up. Here's the Dublin captain of now, Niamh Gannon, talking about this issue after that protest, which they had to relent on and play in skorts at the weekend.
It's a player welfare issue. There's young girls, you know, who have said that they've stopped playing Camogie because they don't feel comfortable wearing the skorts. So it's definitely a wider issue that we are seeing. In no other area in our lives are we told that we have to wear something that resembles a skirt. So why in the sport that we love are we being forced to? I definitely think it's so important that us as players have a voice. At the end of the day, we are the ones who are out there playing the sport. So I definitely think, you know, our voices should be heard, and I really hope the association do start listening to the voice of the players.
In no other sport are they forced to wear clothes. The pressure seems to be very great, particularly because of this international embarrassment level to it now. And there might be a managed climb down using that research that they do to see if they're comfortable and fitting or whatever for the women playing that sport. Because goodness knows, we have to keep encouraging, not discouraging. That's the idea. And yet the majority are in favour of them. Are there other things we're missing in that story? Tech says, tell Trump he doesn't need 17 golf courses, says Danny. That's a good one. Yes, everyone has to go through pain, Mr. Trump. Everybody has to go through a little bit of something. 51551 is the text this morning. We begin with Miss Sabone.